Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza in Washington on this live broadcast from Studio 14. Here are some of the top stories making news across Sudan and South Sudan this Thursday, February 23rd, 2023. South Sudan's vice president says the culture of violence has affected development in the country.
This agreement that we have signed to bring peace, let us truly mean business. Let us implement it to the spirit and letter, so that there is security everywhere.
And the World Food Program has suspended operations in some parts of Jonglei State.
On Tuesday evening, a group of armed individuals took 40 metric tons of food from a WFP truck at Anyidi on the Bor-Pibor Road. The food is yet to be recovered, and WFP has suspended movement out of Bor until the full amount is returned.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. An umbrella group calling itself the National Consensus Forum is rejecting a decision by the Unity government to extend their tenure to 2 more years. In a statement issued today, the group calls the 2-year extension of the transitional period illegal. Deng Gai Deng has more for VOA from Juba.
The forum, comprised of 21 South Sudanese political, civil society, women's groups, and faith-based organizations, among others, says it rejects what it calls the continued illegal usurpation of the rights of South Sudanese people by the Unity government. Last August, the parties extended the transitional period by 24 months, until December 2024, when elections are scheduled. The new period began yesterday. Pagana Mom, the head of Real SPLM, says the Artigunu has similarly extended their time in power 6 times over the last decades with what he calls arrogance and complete impunity.
This is definitely a deception, and this is not the first time for the government or the last time for them to extend and create one extension for one reason or another. This extension has become a way of illegal and illegitimate rule by the current corrupt regime. They will never organize a free and fair elections in South Sudan, never.
Amom says failure of the peace deal's implementation is not due to a lack of time, but because President Salva Kiir and his colleagues lack political will to stabilize the country.
Yes, it is a deception. And South Sudanese are going to pressure and force this regime to hand over power back to the people of South Sudan, and one way or another. And we will then work to build a new dispensation for the country and stabilize the country.
Jock Madud Jock, a professor of anthropology at Syracuse University in the U.S. state of New York, signed the statement on behalf of South Sudanese academics and professionals. Jock says if a 3-year-old transitional period could not deliver final peace and stability to the South Sudanese, it will be unbelievable that 2 more years will bring any good.
In my view, there should have been a kind of a middle ground between the dissolution of Artigunu and the extension of the interim period. There should have been something in the middle. It didn't have to be such a stark extremes. Some form of electoral process could have been exercised. Say, sub-national levels of government could have been elected. Governors of the state, county assemblies, and state assemblies could have been elected to give people a sense that something is happening, that there is some movement, that there is some traction happening towards transition, and leave the presidential and national legislature elections for an extended period.
York says the people are left with no certainty of elections next year and no hope for a new government. Abraham Awolich, an activist and co-founder of People's Coalition for Civil Actions, says extending the transitional unity government is an act of deceit and manipulation by the current lawmakers to achieve their goal of remaining in power.
So from today onward, the government of South Sudan, which is the revitalized government, is illegitimate. It is a government that has been instituted by people who have usurped power and who have decided to use an agreement that has no legitimate consent of the people of South Sudan to drag their life in office almost forever. Because the agreement says that if the parties, as long as they continue to agree, they will always extend themselves in power.
Rajab Mohandas, Executive Director of Organization for Responsive Governance and a member of the group's People's Coalition for Civil Action, says extending Artegano is not good news for citizens.
Ideally, the agreement was intended to deliver peace and stability and improve the conditions of the ordinary citizens. These conditions have not improved over the last 53 months of implementation of the peace agreement. And so this extension is coming at a time when the economic situation is really bad and the security situation around the country continues to worsen.
Amom describes the Kiir administration as a government whose prime and narrow goal has always been that of remaining in power and maintaining its status quo. For VOA News, I am Deng Gaideng in Juba.
South Sudan's Vice President James Wani Iga, who is in charge of the economic cluster, says unless South Sudan stops violence, hunger will remain a challenge. Wake Simon Wudu reports for VOA from the capital, Juba.
Vice President Iga says insecurity and violence has exacerbated South Sudan's problems, including hunger and a lack of economic growth. He says the peace agreement should be implemented.
This agreement that we have signed to bring peace, let us truly mean business. Let us implement it to the spirit and letter, so that there is security everywhere. And soon we must enter into disarmament, because armed civilians are by themselves an insecurity to the country, and no production will take place. Then we will begin to complain. Why are we hungry? We are hungry because there is no environment for cultivation due to violence.
Iga made the call today at the opening of a three-day economic forum in Juba. The event is aimed at addressing challenges impeding business growth in the country. Iga says for business to triumph in South Sudan, there should be peace.
This is why I always use these platforms to appeal to the outlaws, those fighting the government, to respond to the appeal of the Pope, so that we reach a final agreement. Then that will have created a suitable environment for real economic venture.
Thomas Mutor, the patron of the Central Equatoria Business Union, says the economic forum is organized to act as a premier platform that will help address challenges affecting businesses in Central Equatoria State and South Sudan at large.
Create an enabling and conducive environment for sharing ideas on tackling challenges of economic transformation. The second objective of why Juba Economic Forum was established is to promote civil engagement and awareness about opportunities for the development of small and medium enterprises.
Iga says South Sudan's laws should be implemented to promote and support business growth across the country. And he says the government needs to create opportunities for decent jobs, secure livelihoods, and sustainable business practices. Unfortunately, he says many businesses are being strangled by the country's regulatory policies.
Small and medium firms, business, that employ the most people are especially restricted by complicated regulations of the government. And it is through these regulations they are twisted and they breed corruption. So our regulations and laws should be there to promote business, to promote investment, not to impede. But there are too many impediments towards business.
Top UN human rights experts on South Sudan warned a week ago that parts of the country are sliding into ethnic violence, yet government is not making intervention to avert the situation. According to the United Nations World Food Programme, South Sudan is facing one of its hungriest years since the country's independence, with 7.76 million people expected to be in crisis levels of hunger. For VOA News, I'm Wake Simon Wudu in Juba.
The UN's World Food Program says gunmen in Jonglei State looted several metric tons of food from a UN chartered truck. An official with WFP in South Sudan says the agency has suspended operations around Bor until the stolen food is recovered. For VOA News, Manyang David Mayar reports from Juba.
Gemma Snowdon, head of communications for the World Food Programme in South Sudan, tells South Sudan in Focus a truck carrying 40 metric tons of food was heading to the Greater Pibor administrative area and was few kilometers from Bor town when unidentified gunmen attacked and looted all the food it contained.
On Tuesday evening, a group of armed individuals took 40 metric tons of food from a WFP truck at Anyidi on the Bor-Pibor road. The food is yet to be recovered and WFP has suspended movement out of Bor until the full amount is returned.
Snowdon says the food was supposed to feed 170,000 hungry people in Pibor. Jonglei State Deputy Governor Jacob Akindengit says the looted vehicle, part of a convoy of 15 trucks, broke down near Bor.
The driver left the truck, 6 p.m. at night before, came to town, leave the truck alone. They did not inform authority until the truck was looted. When I heard the message yesterday, I mobilized all the organized forces, national security, CID, and myself. I went myself to witness. I told them don't move the truck there. When I went there, the truck actually was looted.
Akej says he and security forces searched the area and recovered only 38 sacks or about 2,000 kilograms of sorghums hidden under the grass. He says the recovered food was handed over to the World Food Programme field office in Bor. Akej says state authorities are working to make sure the remaining 762 sacks of sorghum are recovered.
On Tuesday evening, a group of armed individuals took 40 metric tons of food from a WFP truck at Anyidi on the Bor-Pibor road. The food is yet to be recovered and WFP has suspended movement out of Bor until the full amount is returned.
The Jonglei Civil Society Network, which is based in Bor, condemned the incident. Its chairperson, Bol Dengbol, says the attack was aggravated by widespread hunger in the state but urged civilians not to interfere with the WFP operations.
On the side of the communities around, people who are around, but if something like that is there, it is their prime responsibility to see to it that these humanitarian actors who are helping the needy, are helped, in doing their work. Such things should have been reported to the police, so that they are rescued. Now, over 700 is looted. That is a great loss.
The World Food Programme says 75% of the local population in Pibor are acutely food insecure. According to the latest Integrated Food Security Phase Classification, or IPC report, 6.6 million people, or over half of South Sudan's population, are experiencing high levels of acute food insecurity, and Jonglei State and the Greater Pibor Administrative Area are the most food insecure states in South Sudan. For VOA News, I'm Anyang David Mayor in Juba.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, South Sudanese refugees in Sudan are asking aid agencies to help them with repatriation. Find out why after the break.
This is a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
The World Health Organization and Africa Center for Disease Control say we all can help fight the global pandemic by frequently washing our hands with soap and water or using hand sanitizers. For more information on protecting yourself and others, check with reliable sources such as the WHO and Africa Center for Disease Control. And remember to listen to VOA for the latest on COVID-19.
That was a message in the public interest from VOA Africa. South Sudan in Focus is now on WhatsApp. Send us a message on +1 202 630 8011. Tell us what's happening in your area or give us your feedback on the stories you hear on South Sudan in Focus. We look forward to hearing from you on WhatsApp. That number again, +1 202 630 8011.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Friday marks 1 year since the Russian invasion of Ukraine. Action Against Hunger released a report Wednesday saying the global hunger and funding gap has worsened in the wake of the war in Ukraine. The humanitarian organization says 1 in 10 people around the world go to bed hungry each night. VOA's Nabil Biagio spoke to Eric Bebenas, Director for External Relations at Action Against Hunger, about the report.
Why we chose to release this report around the anniversary of the conflict in Ukraine is because there were already worrying trends, and when the conflict erupted, they accelerated. For example, the cost of grain in particular skyrocketed, and it was already high prior to the war. And so what we're seeing in one of the countries in which we operate, Somalia, where 90%, if not more, of grain imports are coming from Ukraine and Russia. So the cost of food rose. That was coupled with inflation. And as you know, sort of a generation worse drought and climate problem in Somalia. So that was one of the immediate impacts that we saw. You know, one of the other impacts that's important to point out is it sort of diverted global attention. What our report showed was, yes, there's a funding gap. The good news is there is more funding coming into hunger-related programs, but the need is far outpacing our ability to accelerate the funding. And Ukraine is just one example. I think you could point to lots of others that are happening, like in the Horn right now, and the droughts there, flooding in South Sudan. Of course, the earthquakes in Turkey and Syria. So attention gets a little bit diverted as these other issues pop up.
Yes, sometimes it's not easy to make a direct link to the war in Ukraine. In your report, you mentioned that the war in Ukraine has had far-reaching ripple effects. And it's not only killing Ukrainians, but by raising fertilizer and food prices, it's also killing children in places like Somalia. Can you elaborate on that?
Definitely. So, you know, in addition to the 828 million people who go to bed hungry each night, as many as 50 million people in 45 countries are on the verge of famine. And the highest hunger rates in Africa are in Africa, where 1 in 5 people don't get enough to eat. So when conflicts such as the war in Ukraine or the climate crisis, I mean, the world needs to invest even more to help solve those problems. So as funds get diverted to help answer the call in Ukraine, which is important for us to do, we also need to find the resources to address those issues that started prior to the war, but only get worse as our attention gets spread thin. The stressors are many, and we feel that there's enough resources globally to help meet that need.
You operate in Sudan and South Sudan, and both countries are listed among the hungriest in the world. United Nations reports say close to 8 million people in South Sudan, for example, will not have enough food to eat through the 2023 lean season. And similar numbers are cited in Sudan, millions of people facing severe food insecurity. What global factors are contributing to hunger in these two countries?
We could point back to the import-export issue. So the global price of food has gone higher. My organization is seeing actually hunger in South Sudan, and Sudan is dealing with the ripple effects of climate. I think it's fair to say that a lot of the producers of climate, the net producers of carbon in the atmosphere, are coming from the more well-to-do nations, and it impacts most heavily the less fortunate among us. And in a place like South Sudan, where a fifth year of food insecurity is in front of us. And a lot of that is coming from flooding that's driving hunger. And that's resulted in 2/3 of the population being projected to face acute malnutrition. So while the connection is a little bit less direct, there is a connection for, the globe coming together to fight climate and the climate-related issues, because it does impact the people in South Sudan and Sudan acutely.
That's Eric Bebenes, Director of External Relations at the Action Against Hunger. He was speaking to my colleague Nabil Biagio from New York. From New York, we move to Khartoum, where some South Sudanese refugees in Sudan are calling on aid agencies and the South Sudan government to repatriate them back to their country. Khartoum state authorities have planned to relocate the refugees to a new site, but refugee leaders in Khartoum say the new location lacks basic services. Michael Atit has more for VOA from Khartoum.
Last month, Khartoum State Acting Governor Ahmed Hamza Osman ordered the immediate relocation of about 3,000 South Sudanese refugees residing in Takamul 2 in the Eastern Bank locality to Naivasha camp in Omdurman. Governor Hamza vowed to provide the newly relocated refugees with services, including security, in accordance with international humanitarian best practices. Some refugees rejected the proposal and expressed concern over their safety and the provision of services for their children in Omdurman. Takamul 2 camp leader Franco Sebastian, who hails from Western Equatoria State, says the new location is not fit for settlement and lacks basic services.
We went to access the suggested location, and we found out that it's not fit for living in. It's a farming area which can be easily flooded every rainy season. Besides, the area lacks basic services.
Last month, Takamul 2 was engulfed in flames. One person was killed and the land was burned to the ground. This was the fourth fire in the camp in 5 years. Sebastian suggested that instead of relocating the refugees to an area which lacks services, it is better to take refugees to a third country, such as Rwanda, Ethiopia, or, he puts it, any country in Europe.
We are brothers, and whatever issue we disagree on can be resolved. I hope the government of South Sudan, through the embassy here, should stand beside us, as they used to do. We just want to get our rights through legal means.
Speaking to South Sudan in Focus, the communication officer for the United Nations Refugee Agency, or UNHCR, in Sudan, Asadullah Nasrallah, says talks are ongoing with Khartoum authorities and South Sudanese refugees to find an amicable way of resolving the matter.
UNHCR, Sudan's Commission for Refugees, and other humanitarian partners are working together to ensure that any relocation to Naivasha takes place voluntarily and that the conditions and services are suitable and sustainable for them once they arrive there.
The Takamul 2 camp was designed as a gathering site for South Sudanese who wanted to return to their country after 2011, but about 3,000 failed to return home. Sudan is home to more than 800,000 South Sudanese refugees, with the majority in the White Nile in central Sudan, according to the United Nations Refugee Agency, or UNHCR. Michael Atit for VOA News, Khartoum.
Jill Biden on Wednesday made the first visit by a U.S. First Lady to the southwestern African nation of Namibia, chosen, she said, because of its vibrant democracy. The nation's president and first lady warmly welcomed her as Biden, who has visited Africa several times before, began a 5-day two-nation trip to the continent. VOA's Anita Powell reports from the capital, Windhoek.
When asked why she chose Namibia, an arid, sparsely populated southern African nation, as the first stop on what the White House says is a show of support and respect for Africa, First Lady Jill Biden did not hesitate.
We wanted to come because, this is a young democracy, and we want to support democracies around the world. And we met each other in December, and we're just continuing the relationship. And Monica and I think it's safe to say that we became good friends instantly.
That friend, Namibian First Lady Monica Geingos, agreed.
Madam First Lady, what do you hope to show Dr. Biden on her trip here? What's important to you?
There's a lot in Namibia that we'd really like to show Dr. Biden. I know it's her first visit to Namibia. I know it's the first time an incumbent American First Lady has come to the country. And I think what she talked about is very true. It is a very vibrant democracy. We've got a very large youth population who drives that democracy very energetically. And it's fully enabled by our constitutional values, but also by the personal values of our leadership. He may not look it, but he's really the ultimate Democrat.
Biden is the first White House official to visit the country after President Joe Biden last year pledged to send administration officials to the continent. She follows Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen and U.S. Ambassador to the U.N. Linda Thomas-Greenfield, who made trips to Africa earlier this year. Thomas-Greenfield focused part of her visit around the food security crisis in East Africa, something Biden plans to highlight when she visits Kenya later this week. But these high-profile visits are also happening against the background of increased visits by top-level Russian and Chinese officials to the continent. Geingos' husband, President Hage Geingob, waited alone in a foyer while the two first ladies were entertained below by dancers from the Nama, Oshivambo, and Swana people, who ululated and danced in a flurry of leopard print, white beads, and deer pelts. One of them dyed hot pink. VOA asked the president what he thought of the unprecedented visit.
We are very happy and honored to receive the First Lady from the United States. It's a great honor to Namibia.
While the nation is a multi-party democracy, the same party, Geingob's Southwest Africa People's Organization, has led since the nation won independence more than three decades ago. That liberation struggle pulled on other parts of the globe for support. Earlier Wednesday, Biden laid a wreath at Heroes Acre, a memorial to those who fought for the nation's independence. That memorial, with its brutalist sculpture and wide expanses of stone, bears an uncanny similarity to the Heroes Acre in Zimbabwe's capital, maybe because both memorials were built by the same North Korean company. And that same firm built the imposing modernist gray cement State House, where Biden was so warmly, colorfully received by the first couple. Biden plans to visit a U.S.-funded project in the capital on Thursday that focuses on empowering women and children, and to lunch with Geingos. Then she heads to Kenya on Friday, where she will use her popularity and platform to draw attention to women's empowerment, children's issues, and the hunger crisis that is, again, ravaging the Horn of Africa. Anita Powell, VOA News, Windhoek, Namibia.
And that's all we prepared for you this Thursday. We now leave you with Ras Corby and the song Fis Sabab. We have been listening to Ras Corby and the song Fis Sabab. I'm your host, John Tanza, on this live broadcast from Studio 14 in Washington. Don't forget to visit voaafrica.com for all your favorite programs and news updates. If you missed this broadcast, go to www.voaafrica.com/South Sudan. Thanks for taking time to be with us. Remember to join us tomorrow for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Papa.
wa mama kanita yan wa mama.